This is The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1. I'm David Martin Davies. Bail is a pretrial restriction that is imposed on a suspect to ensure that they show up for trial. For most of the United States, bail is usually a bail bond, a deposit of money of, or some sort of property to the court to ensure that they have a pretrial detention is released. If the suspect does not return to court, that money will be forfeited. But if the suspect returns, makes all the required appearances, the bail is returned as the trial is concluded. So what happens if you don't have the money for cash bail? Well, that's the big question. Is the bail system broken? Does it need to be reformed? And in what way? Because the bail reform bill that's in front of the Texas legislature right now makes it actually harder to bond out without cash. What's behind the Governor Abbott-backed bail crackdown bill? How will it work and who will it impact? This is a community conversation and we do want to hear from you. You can call in. The number is 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. You could also tweet at us at TPRSource or email us at thesource@tpr.org. And you can text us at that number, 833-877-8255. We're joined to discuss with this panel to discuss bail reform in Texas, Derek Cohen, Vice President of the Public of Policy at the Texas Public Policy Foundation. Derek Cohen, welcome to The Source.
Hey, Dave. Glad to be here.
And also with us, Twyla Carter, National Policy Director at the Bail Project. Twyla Carter, great to have you.
Thank you so much for the invitation. Great to be here.
So, Derek Cohen, if it not for this quorum-busting thing that's happening with the Democrats, we probably would be seeing this bail reform bill pass in the Texas legislature right now. Do you like this bill?
I think it's important to understand that authors in both chambers, including former authors as well, have admitted that this is not a perfect bill. What this actually represents, though, is a step in the right direction in some ways, a step backwards in some others. On net, I would say that, yes, this is an improved version, a net improvement on our bail system. But I also think that there's elements of the bill that do need to be corrected. I think there are pro-public safety elements in here. There are things that actually do assist some indigent defendants in here. But there's also things such as the regulation of bail funds, such as the denial of PRs and a broad swath, of personal bonds in a broad swath of instances that I think need a little more scrutiny.
Well, so let's go to Twyla Carter at the Bail Project. What do you think of this crackdown reform that Governor Abbott is supporting in Texas?
Well, I believe that, Texas distinguished itself as a leader on criminal justice reform at one point in time, and I think still considers itself to be a leader on criminal justice reform. But unfortunately, House Bill 2, Senate Bill 6 do not promote safety and justice. And these bills are, quite honestly, unsafe, unwise, and unconstitutional. And they're laws that would, I think, really put Texas in a different light than it's used to on its criminal justice stance. You know, for one, it further criminalizes poverty in Texas. It's going to harm rural and border communities. It's going to be wasteful to taxpayers. It's certainly, to Derek's point, which I appreciate, attacks charitable bail funds, which is the community's response to mass incarceration. And it's going to hurt Texans overall, especially Black and Brown Texans and women, the poorest of the poor in our communities.
I'm going to play a clip here. This is from the television station CBS DFW, and they did a report doing an interview with Governor Abbott recently, and this is what he had to say about bail reform.
The governor said since Democrats blocked bail reform from passing in the regular session, there have been five people killed by criminals who were released on bail.
There's blood on the hands of the Democrats for failing to step up and help pass bail reform in Texas.
That's a pretty strong statement.
It's a true statement. It's very dangerous. We live in very dangerous communities because of bail reform challenges. We expect the Democrats to be here and pass bail reform.
Twyla Carter, I have not been able to get the details on these murders that have occurred. Now, Governor Abbott says the number is up to 7. Do you know what he's talking about?
You know, look, we certainly understand that there is an increase in violent crime. We're seeing it around the country. But what I want to point to are a couple of points. One, former Republican Judge Michael Fields testified during the regular session against Senate Bill 262, which was the earlier iteration of this bill, that 93% of the examples, for example, that were used by Kim Ogg, the Harris County DA, to talk about the need for this bail reform, 93% of them were folks that were released on secured bond, which means that they utilized the bail bond industry to be able to post the bond amount. Damon Allen, for example, was killed by someone out on a secured bond. So you know that cash bail system is flawed when a person who might actually be a danger to the community, if they have access to resources, they are buying their freedom. And a person who throws a rock through a window, who is poor and has no access to resources, will remain in jail. And that is the crux of the problem with this bill. This bill actually makes the use of money bail more prevalent. It's going to harm more people. It does not ensure public safety. It ensures that poor people are going to remain in jail. So if we're going to talk about violent crime, I would certainly reiterate what the Harris County Commissioner's Court stated in their substitute resolution a couple of days ago, where they released a resolution, and I quote, violent crime has increased in Harris County, for example, for reasons that are likely attributable to the economic destabilization caused by the global pandemic that every jurisdiction is experiencing. And we've seen data from New York and other places as well, that the connection to bail reform is a myth. It is about taking care of each other in our communities, making sure that we have shelter, food, support, et cetera, and not relying on the use of cash bail to keep people in jail when we know that the that are in jail pretrial before conviction are in on nonviolent low-level offenses.
So I'm just really trying to drill down on this claim that Governor Abbott says that 5, now 7 people are dead. They were murdered because of the fact that Democrats left Texas and they were not able to pass bail reform. And that seems, I guess he's got a piece of paper of all the communists that are in the government as well. But according to the Harris County court records, at least 3 of the defendants in these cases were out on jail having paid cash bail, which would not have been prevented under this legislative proposal. And that's according to reporting from the Texas Tribune. So, I mean, there is some hyperbolic language being used to push this bail reform bill. We did invite Republican Senator Joan Huffman, author of the GOP-backed bail legislation, Senate Bill 6, but she declined to come on the air to help us understand her bill. We're going to take a break, and we'll be right back after this one-minute break. The number is 833-877-8255. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. Back to The Source on Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. We're talking about a bail legislation crackdown that's before the legislature right now. It would make it more difficult for people to get out of jail on a cash-free bond. And what does that look like? You can call in. The number is 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. Derek Cohen, Vice President of the Policy at the Texas Public Policy Foundation. I want to get back on this thing with Governor Abbott and him claiming, and he's literally saying that there's blood on the hands of these Democrats for not allowing this bill to be passed right now. because of these murders that he says took place because of this situation, but we don't have details on it. I mean, do you agree with the governor in saying that Democrats have blood on their hands?
I think there's an important thing to understand that is kind of getting lost in the discussion of SB6 and HB2 specifically, is that there's an adjunct to this entire legislative initiative, and that is HJR 1. And HJR 1 is actually a constitutional amendment that would allow judges to deny individuals a bail. And here's the problem we talk about when we discuss bail, is that we have this asymmetry. And as Ms. Carter highlighted, you know, a person who presents a high risk is able to buy their way out. And the way that we try to, you know, mitigate that risk is by increasing the slider over on how much is required for them to post in order to get out. But according to the Texas Constitution, so long as the individual is not accused of capital murder in which evidence is facially present, as well as has been previously adjudicated of severe felonies, absent that, they are due an amount, or they get the opportunity to actually post a bail amount. And so what we see is, even when people come back on, you know, they're out on bail, they come back, they get bail set higher for the next offense, and subsequently until we actually have a murder, these are the problems that we run into on that high side there. Now, on the low side, and I think this is important and shouldn't be lost from the discussion too, I think that this bill actually does make it easier for evidence to be presented to the magistrate judge that allows the individual to be let out. You know, the public safety report is actually going to highlight information that has this person present as a low risk, rather than just looking at that particular arrest affidavit as we do right now. But that being said, you know, I do agree that cash and access to cash or access to means in any way, shape, or form is a very poor proxy for risk. The problem is we need to have a better system of diagnosing that risk on the front end and not just what this person has in their wallet.
Now we're bringing in Abin Israel into our conversation. He's a policy fellow at the Center for Justice Research at Texas Southern University. And Ben Israel, welcome to The Source. Where do you see Texas bail reform heading, particularly looking at the bill that's before the Texas legislature?
You know, I think we've got to strike a balance. Obviously, public safety is important, and I don't think there's a Democrat out there that doesn't care about public safety. I think the issue is when we look at places like Harris County, where African Americans are disproportionately represented for arrest in almost every single category, we know that Black and brown people also disproportionately are impacted by economics. And so when we look at the criminal justice system and we put that together with the economic situation that most Black and brown people are in, anytime we make it more difficult for people to get out of jail, you know, there is a racial and class aspect to that. So, of course, we need to protect the public, but it doesn't need to be at the expense of civil rights, and it doesn't need to be a bill that's going to disproportionately hurt people who are already suffering in a criminal justice system that we have seen is under extreme scrutiny for a lack of racial equity.
Talking points that we're hearing that there's bad crime in these high population counties, whether it be Bexar County, Harris County, that part of the reason is that so many people are getting out of jail without they should be not out on bond. Now, I don't know if that's a coded message or not, but it seems to be resonating in certain communities that vote heavy for the Republican Party. What do you make of it?
I mean, we've always had a lot of coded language when it comes to racial politics, whether it be talking about welfare queens or the inner city. And again, I think that people in African American and Latinx communities do also care about public safety. The issue is, can we do this in an equitable way that is not going to disproportionately put more Black and brown people behind bars or keep them in a system where they haven't been convicted of a crime, you know? So we understand that public safety is important, but it's also important that we reform the criminal justice system so that we're not continuing to put labels on people who are already at a disadvantage socially.
Twyla Carter, you mentioned earlier that if this bill becomes law, it would impact the border and rural counties hard. How is that?
Well, these bills, you know, eliminate access to personal bonds for many people just accused of a crime, presumed innocent, and it expands pretrial detention for new categories of folks accused of a crime who were previously eligible for bail. So as of June 1st of this year, for example, 93 Texas counties were already paying to house arrestees in detention facilities outside of their county jails. And these counties are concentrated in rural and border areas, with Cameron and Hidalgo counties paying to send the most arrestees out of county, for example. The Texas Commission on Jail Standards actually estimates an average jail cost at roughly $60 a day. So not only will House Bill 2 and Senate Bill 6 increase costs for these counties, but they will likely also force more counties to pay to house their arrestees elsewhere. So jails in Angelina, Bell, and Cherokee counties, for example, are already near capacity. So it really is going to cause a bigger problem for the rural and border communities if either one of these bills are passed.
Derek Cohen, Texas Public Policy Foundation, part of this bill proposal is creating a computer system that the magistrate who would set bond or not set bond would have that suspect's entire criminal history at their fingertips. How does that work?
Absolutely. So this proposal would work by creating what is known as a public safety report. And this is distinct from what other jurisdictions have done with providing any sort of actuarial assessment on this. But essentially right now, the practice it goes specifically in these rural counties is we essentially have to do magistration based on the arrest affidavit, the what the police officer swears establishes the probable cause for the arrest. And so what that looks like is you go before a magistrate, might be a justice of the peace, no law school training. He goes before that, and he looks at the particular piece of paper that's in front of him, and then magistrates the release based on the actual information of that one particular arrest. Now, the problem is that obviously is done absent any sort of longstanding criminal history. You know, does this individual have a history of demonstrated domestic violence? Do they have serious felony conduct in their history? Other things that might raise red flags that might factor into the determination of the setting of that bond, or at least whether or not there's a release decision, you know, pending that particular consideration. Now, the problem is, again, like I said, under the current law, under current constitutional standards, an individual can only be denied bail if they have that adjudicated felony history or facially evident capital murder charges been filed against them. Now, if you have an arrest affidavit that represents that facially evident capital murder charge, that's something you would be able to do. But through no other system, I mean, we have some dangerous people that have gone through, like DeBrett Black, Damon Allen's murderer being a great example, that simply that criminal history, previous assaults on a public servant, were not considered at all. And so what this would do would simply make the magistrate have to have that information in front of them when determining both whether or not this individual gets a personal bond, whether they get a secured bond, whether they get any conditions associated with either of those, whichever the case may be.
Ben Israel, so the magistrate would have the suspect's entire criminal history, but do they have other parts of that individual's history as well? Do they know, has this person been working at the same place for 20 years? Do they know about his family, that he has tight ties to the community and he's not a flight risk?
Not to my knowledge. And the other issue that it's difficult to tie in, again, when we've been talking about, you know, police reform at the legislature, you know, the first session, is it taking into consideration that there's over-policing in Black and brown communities? Is it take into consideration that many people that don't have the money to afford lawyers do not get the same treatment, that most cases and convictions come from plea deals, not from actual the evidence being laid out. So many people of color and many poor people are kind of forced in some situations under duress to take a deal. It doesn't necessarily mean they committed the crime. It means they didn't have the money and the resources to fight a system that stacked against them.
And Twyla Carter at the Bail Project, I know there's been advocacy for the creation of something like an algorithm to help the magistrate decide whether or not an individual is a flight risk, if they're a solid member of the community, that they're more likely to come back and do their trial, that the cash bail may not be necessary.
You know, so the public safety report, to Derek's point, it doesn't include the algorithmic tool right now, but let's be very clear. It is still a risk assessment tool to a certain degree that takes into account criminal history. And let's just talk about that for a moment. Exactly what, Ben Israel has already touched on. If you've pled guilty in the past just to get out of jail, then you now have criminal history. If we're going to be looking at whether or not you're going to return to court, and we want to track whether or not you've had warrants in the past, I know from my history as a public defender for a decade that we would issue warrants, for example, if we had somebody in a county jail and they needed to be transported to a different county to address a matter there. We would issue a warrant to have them transported, and that's going to count against that person as showing a failure to appear. What we see at the Bail Project in our over 17,000 bailouts in 3 years in 27 jurisdictions is that life is what gets in the way for most people. Most people don't come to court simply because they can't get a ride, they forgot, they can't get out of work, they need childcare. That is a very different standard than what the purpose of tracking failure to appear in the first place was, which is we are trying to identify people who are willfully absconding and avoiding prosecution. That's a very different standard than just mere non-appearance. So the problem with using an algorithmic tool and the problem with risk assessment tools being used around the country and the problem that we foresee certainly with this public safety report, even though it's called something different, is that you're still taking into consideration factors that have already harmed communities of color and poor communities because, again, as was already explained, communities of color are over-policed, so they have more interaction with the criminal legal system and with law enforcement. They are going to have higher rates of conviction because of the cash bail system and the coercive nature for them to plead guilty to get out of jail. What we see about risk assessment tools and algorithmic tools is that they do not do what they purport to do. They are not able to truly gauge dangerousness when we know that we have racially inflected variables coming into play to determine it, again, based on conviction. So,
right.
Not only will they, you know, not lead to necessarily decarceration, but they definitely don't lead to racial equity. And we should not have to choose between decarceration and racial equity.
We're taking a break. We're going to continue our conversation about bail reform in Texas. There's a bail crackdown bill in the Texas legislature right now. It would make it harder for people to get out on bail without cash. It would also keep some charities, from posting bail for others, and some other things in there as well. We're going to talk about that when we come back from the break. The number is 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. Stay with us. This is The Source. First on Texas Public Radio, I'm David Martin Davies. Republicans and Democrats agree that Texas' bail system is flawed and changes should be made, but they have very different ideas about what kind of reforms are needed. Do you think that the Texas bail system is broken, and do you support bills that would make it harder for criminals to get criminal defendants to get out on bail? Are you concerned about how these changes would impact the poor and minority defendants? You can call in. The number is 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. Do you have a personal experience with the Texas bail system or family members who were accused of a crime and had to navigate through the state's cash bail system and you lost a lot of money in the process? We want to hear your story, and you can be anonymous, 833-TPR-TALK. Twyla Carter, I'm going to go back to you, and I kind of want to get answers from our other panelists as well on this. At the Bail Project, you were talking about, you know, these magistrates are having to make decisions about this accused individual right in front of them and about whether or not to let them back out on the streets, for whether with a cash bond or with a personal recognizance bond. And the top question in front of that magistrate should be, is this person a danger to the community? And so the question is, does the magistrate have adequate information to make that assessment?
You know, I certainly understand and appreciate the argument that the magistrate should be able to utilize more information in making that determination, and absolutely agree with that, agree with more training. All of that is great. The problem, though, is, again, as I've already started to explain, is that when you're taking into account criminal history, which is really the only proxy you have for is this person going to be dangerous or not, that is riddled with problems for all the reasons we've already discussed. When you're looking at whether or not the person is, you know, likely to reoffend and do something in the community, what we would certainly say at the Bail Project is that you can't have meaningful bail reform in a vacuum. We have to actually fund and take care of people in the community, which means adequately funding social support services and putting mechanisms in place that allow folks to identify their needs and identify solutions to those needs, which is exactly the model that we use at the Bail Project, for example. So while I understand that the magistrate has a big job in front of him or her, in trying to make this determination, looking through a crystal ball, if you will, ultimately what we know is that everyone accused of a crime is presumed innocent. And the Constitution recognizes that human beings are going to commit really heinous crimes, and yet it does not make that distinction. So while we know that there are going to be people, and to your point earlier, you know, the governor is touting the 7 people who have committed violent offenses, I'm not going to minimize that at all. But it completely ignores the fact that hundreds and of thousands of people are released all across this country every day who just go to work, go to school, take care of their kids, and we should not have legislation that only focuses on the worst case examples that we can point to versus what we know to be the vast majority of people who are in jail pre-trial before a conviction on low-level nonviolent crimes. For the folks who really are worrisome for the community, for all of us, for Democrats, Republicans, independents, everyone, that's what we should be focusing on and talking about and coming up with very real solutions. But those solutions have to include community support, community-based problem-solving, and not just the criminal legal system.
All right. So Derek Cohen, Texas Public Policy Foundation, the magistrate on the bench, got the suspect in front of him. Should I let this guy go? Should I keep him locked up? He's got to decide what about the community, keeping the community safe. Does he have adequate information?
As of right now, no, he does not. And I hasten to agree with my co-panelist, in that there needs to be systems around that. Now, the problem is, of course, though, having 254 counties, you know, so much of the narrative, I would say across the board of all public policy discussions seems driven by Harris County. But we need something that works as well in Hudspeth County as it does in Harris County. And simply put, whether or not it's a larger county that actually has a bond office, or whether it's a smaller county that usually has any sort of pretrial supervision or the execution of conditions with pretrial supervision rolled up in the actual CSCD, the community, you know, the probation office, if you will. We generally have a very diverse approach to that, and we're trying to regulate. When I say trying to regulate, I mean not just in this bill, but in others, trying to create a uniform set of standards for the entire state that both are incredibly well-resourced counties and almost under, you know, no resource at all counties can both comply with. And I think that having the state-level provision of the criminal history, and again, to highlight the additional training as well to interpret that public that criminal history, is very important. I think it is very important to not only have to let the magistrate know that this individual might have, you know, three felony convictions. Now, if it's a three misdemeanor convictions. Now, if that's a Class B possession of marijuana, that is essentially almost worth no value in prediction of whether or not this individual will be arrested for subsequent criminal behavior, or if this person's a failure to appear. But if this individual had three misdemeanor convictions of bail jumping, that actually is incredibly relevant and needs to be part of that actual consideration. So these are the sort of considerations that the magistrate needs in front of them, but doesn't necessarily have now, and I think is trying to be supported by this legislation.
All right, so let me go take a call. Let's go to Jay on the phones. Number is 833-877-8255. And Jay, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Hi. I think we can all agree that the system needs to be reformed. However, it always seems that when they're talking reform, they're never considering people of color or the poor people. And I've known people that have been in jail and they can't raise the bail funds. I mean, how is that fair to them? That's all I have to say.
Well, Jay, thank you so much. I think that's really the heart of a lot of these conversations. And so Twyla Carter, the Bail Project, many people don't have the money to post bond. Even some of these really low bonds, they don't have it. So where does that leave us?
Yes, that absolutely is correct. I appreciate Jay's comment. That's absolutely right. We know that bail bond amounts for Black men, for example, are 35% higher than bond amounts for white men. Latin men have 19% higher bond amounts than white men. And, you know, to your point, this is all part of the entire process of the criminal legal system of over-policed communities, and then having higher bond amounts, having higher charges, not being able to afford it because of socioeconomic factors, et cetera. So we can see how deep and wide this problem goes. Anytime your system is rooted in the use of cash bail, then you know you have a problem. And that's what this bill, these bills, you know, House Bill 2 and Senate Bill 6 do. They center the use of money bail, and that is problematic from the start. So anything that comes from the criminal legal system as far as bail reform is going to be flawed because it's flawed at its root.
All right. And let's go to Deborah on the phones. Deborah, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Yes. One thing I don't think people have thought about is the fact that Texas has a lot of for-profit prisons. Who pays for all these extra people to be in prison outside of the taxpayers? They can't pay, so we're paying. I think it's all about money for them. It's not about criminal justice. That's what I have to say.
Well, thank you so much for saying that. Let's go to Ben Israel, Texas Southern University, for your reaction.
You know, again, I'm going to reiterate that I think it's important for the magistrates to have the information that's being pushed. I just don't think it's enough. I'll agree with Twyla. I think we need comprehensive reform. We can't just reform bail. We need to also reform policing. We also need to reform education. All these things are interlocked. If you just look at the end result, after people have already been arrested, if they're already in the system, a system that hasn't been based on equity, then you're only going to continue to further disparities. So again, it is important to look at their criminal history. It is important to look if people have been responsible and jumping bail, but that's not enough information. We've got to take everything into consideration, and we've got to take into consideration their economic situation and the police environment, the economic environment.
And to Deborah's question about the profit motive for things like the bail system and for profit prisons?
I mean, when we look at the criminal justice system in the United States, it's based off of profit. It's based off of, expanding the 13th Amendment so that people who were once enslaved are now basically responsible to the state and are an economic driver for the state. So the criminal justice system has always been about profit in this country.
Yeah, when you talk to people who are locked up and they tell you the reason why I'm here, the reason why I'm inside this building and I can't leave is because someone's making money off of me being in here. All right, we're going to take another break. And the number is 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. If you're going to weigh in on our conversation about bail reform in Texas, we'd love to hear what you got to say. If you've been impacted by this directly, you or someone in your family, you can call in, tell us your story. Also, when we come back, we want to talk about how this would impact charities. This would curb how charities could bail people out who are indigent. Why is that in this bill? This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. We'll be right back. On Texas Public Radio, we're talking about bail reform in Texas, and you can call in. The number is 833-877-8255. Let's go straight to the phones with Joe. And Joe, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Yes. Hi. I wanted to address the question of magistrates getting adequate information and compare it to a system that I know very well and that judges needing information, which is the foster care, child services system that deals with children taken out of their home. And there's monthly meetings in front of the judges to determine, is this child getting adequate services? Is the system doing what it's supposed to? And the entire national CASA volunteer system was created because the answer to the question is no. The judges don't get adequate information on these cases, and yet we're spending upwards of $40,000 to $50,000 a year per child on social workers and public defenders and all sorts of infrastructure, but they're not getting the basic information they need. So I look at that and I say, relying on subjective, imaginary systems that we're going to miraculously get information on the kind of abstract questions as to whether someone poses a threat is a pipe dream.
All right, Joe, thank you for that call. Let's go to Alan, who's called in. Alan, you're on the air.
Yeah, so thank you for taking my call. I just have a question is, like, how many people, like, will lose their employment because they can't afford the bail to get out of jail?
All right. Thank you for that call. So, Ben Israel, you know that when you lock people up in jail, you typically have all these other things that happen to you. If your car was impounded at that time, then you're probably going to lose your vehicle. You may lose your job. You may lose your apartment. All sorts of things. Your relationships could go bust because you're locked up on bond. You can't pay bail.
You know, I have a good friend whose father was not present in her life. And she explained to me that the reason why is he got arrested a couple times earlier before she was born. And because when he got out of jail, he could not find a job, he would go back into the criminal justice system. And it was just this, repeating cycle of him not being able to find a job, going back into criminal activity, and then not being able to take care of his children. So there's all kinds of cycles of poverty and neglect that get perpetuated when people simply cannot pay the economic toll for the criminal justice system. If we're really trying to reform the system, we've got to make bail affordable, and we've got to allow people to get back into the working economy once they've done their service.
Twyla Carter at the National Policy Director for the Bail Project. There are charities like the Bail Project, and y'all will help people who are indigent get out on bail. But this reform bill will, in many ways, will make that not make it illegal. You can't do that. Can you respond to that?
Absolutely, and I appreciate the opportunity to talk about this because this is a very important component to this bill. Because we are talking on one side about this bill will result in increased incarceration all across the state. And charitable bail funds, there are at least 14 of them in the state of Texas. Charitable bail funds are the community's response to mass incarceration. And to be clear, charitable bail funds come into the picture after the prosecutor, the defense attorney, public defender have already made their arguments to the judge. The judge has already considered all of the factors, and the judge has made a decision that this is the price of freedom. So we step in afterwards to help the poorest of the poor. We are helping people who can't even afford the 10% for a bail bond agent, right? So it's important to understand this, because the way this bill is written right now is it requires us to report information to now the presiding judge. It used to be the sheriff, but Senator Huffman made an amendment a few days ago, and so now it's the presiding judge, where we have to report our information to them. But let's be clear, this bill carves out charitable bail funds that are run by churches. It does not touch the bail bond industry. It carves out small bail funds who bail out maybe three people or so or less in a six-month period, if you will. But for community members who have come together and community organizations who have come together to say, we want to pool our money together so we can get our loved ones home on our own, we're the ones being targeted, the only ones being targeted. So all of a sudden, our money is somehow different than a bail bond agent, than a church, or a very small bail fund. So it has a reporting requirement that we now have to turn over our information to the court, which I will say on a number of fronts is problematic. One, that is government overreach at its finest, interfering with just community members and community organizations, nonprofit organizations doing their business, first and foremost. Second, it puts a chilling effect on us being able to go and talk to people to say to them, we are completely independent. We're going to help you do our needs-based assessment and help you get services in the community. And it limits who we're allowed to even help. It tells us that we cannot bail out anybody if they have a prior felony conviction in the past 10 years. It used to be indefinite, but again, Senator Huffman amended it to make it for the last 10 years.
So let me ask you a specific question, though, about this. They're targeting operations like the Bail Project. Any evidence that these community funds to bail people out, indigent owned funds, is a public safety concern?
There is no evidence of that. Here's what I will say again, and I said this towards the top of the hour. You know, again, former Republican Judge Michael Fields testified that 93% of the examples that Kim Ogg used, the DA from Harris County, of these violent, you know, people who people who got out and committed a new violent crime while they were bonded out, 93% were out on secured bond. That wasn't us. That's the bail bond industry. So again, we're being targeted for a reason that is not clear to us, other than the fact that we know the bail bond industry is a $2 billion industry, and I'm sure they'd like to keep it that way, because what this bill does is absolutely enrich the predatory bail industry. And it puts us in a position to where we are the only ones who have to now report things, have limits, defend ourselves, and we can be suspended by a judge for a year if we violate anything with no due process. And we're talking about, you know, relying upon data that may be good, bad, or otherwise, depending on the county that we're working in. And so we are placed in a really, really tough position that is absolutely going to directly impact and devastate our work on behalf of poor communities.
Derek Cohen, Texas Public Policy Foundation, with your Right on Crime initiative, has been very vocal about how expensive keeping people unnecessarily in these jails, how much it costs taxpayers. And do you see this bill, if it becomes law, will that take that burden off of taxpayers?
I think it would be relatively neutral as applied, but again, that again hinges on the appropriate use of the criminal history information, the appropriate use of the training, and also making sure that the local magistrates are truly abiding by that least restrictive condition, least restrictive means language from the bill. And I think that that's a very important thing, is when we talk about bail reform, now a lot of people mix up the idea of having some sort of like end goal for the criminal justice system that needs to be actuated at this one segment. And the truth is, you just want this one segment actually working better. It cannot change things that happen upstream from it. It can only react to the things that are happening in front of it. And so I think that, again, this represents a net positive, but that is with the caveat of all the opportunities for improvement that I and my co-panelists have highlighted.
And so where's the net positive? If it doesn't give taxpayers relief, if it doesn't improve public safety, what's the positive?
Oh, well, I reject that premise. I do think it's going to improve public safety. I don't think that it does so in the most neat and clean way, as we've discussed, but I think that it will do a better job of identifying who is too risky for cash bail. It's going to do a better job of identifying who shouldn't be out on any conditions at all. And it'll also probably be likely be better at really diagnosing who is the individual that is more suitable for that personal bond.
And Ben Israel, can you take that up? Is this going to improve public safety, particularly because the communities that are most impacted by public safety concerns actually are the communities of color? So how should they be looking at this? All right. So he's not there. So Twyla Carter, can you pick that up real quick?
Sure. You know, you're absolutely right. You know, again, you know, Derek and I disagree about whether this is going to help or hurt public safety. But when we know that, you know, taxpayers, Texas taxpayers specifically, are paying $2.4 million a day for paying for people who are waiting, awaiting trial. And we know that across the country, $14 billion is paid by taxpayers for people who have not been convicted of a crime. You know, ultimately what this means is the solution that this bill says is just, let's just lock up anyone charged with a crime, because it's charge-based. So if you're just happen to be charged with a violent offense, then you're going to be denied the opportunity to even be considered for cash bond. And then of course the underlying point that we already made is, even if you're not and you actually are dangerous, if you have the money, you're going to be able to bond out. I will also just add that this dovetails on the fact that there is an affidavit component, an affidavit of indigency component in this bill that is supposed to allow people to say, hey, I can't afford to pay anything, but the amendment changed it from everyone getting it to only people charged with certain offenses. Again, discriminatory in nature and likely unconstitutional.
All right. Twyla Carter, National Policy Director at the Bail Project. Also with us, Derek Cohen, Vice President of Policy for the Texas Public Policy Foundation, and Ben Israel, Policy Fellow at the Center for Justice Research at Texas Southern University. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. Thanks for tuning us in.
This has been The Source on Texas Public Radio. The Source is hosted by David Martin Davies, produced by Ken Johnson and Dallas Williams, with production assistance provided by Jackie Velez and Xiaowen Chan. TPR's summer arts intern, Dan Katz, is TPR's news director. Support for The Source comes from contributors to the Community Engagement Fund, including the Gladys and Ralph Lazarus Foundation.